carweasy.org. There's no cost to you, and WEFT can benefit a great deal. That's carweasy.org. And now here is today's episode of Disability Beat. This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for a pre-recorded interview with Kathy Spiegel of Illinois Radio Reader. But first, disability news for the week of March 9th, 2020. Television characters with disabilities are increasingly being played by actors who actually have the disabilities they're portraying, according to a new report. Among the top 10 Nielsen-rated television programs, 12% of all characters with disabilities in 2018 were depicted by actors with the same diagnoses in real life. By comparison, just 5% were authentically portrayed in 2016. The numbers come from a white paper released recently by the Ruderman Family Foundation, which advocates for disability inclusion. The group looked at 284 shows across 37 networks and 4 streaming platforms in 2018 after conducting a similar review of 2016 shows. More than half of the network programs and 42% of streaming shows included characters with disabilities in 2018, the report found. Over 50% had mental disabilities, a third had physical issues, and the remainder had cognitive disabilities. However, across all of the shows reviewed, just 56 characters with disabilities, or 21.6%, were depicted authentically, many of whom were on the same shows, and nearly three-quarters of actors with disabilities who were cast appeared in less than 5 episodes. The Ruderman Family Foundation called out 2 shows, Atypical on Netflix and This Close on Sundance Now, for each including a large percentage of actors with disabilities. Even still, the report notes that the lead character on Atypical has autism, but is played by a typically developing actor. CBS led all of the networks in authentic casting, followed by NBC, according to the white paper. The social media site Twitter is cracking down on posts that dehumanize people with disabilities. They have a new policy pledging to remove such content. Twitter said last week that it has expanded its hateful conduct policy, quote, to include language that dehumanizes on the basis of age, disability, or disease, end quote. Previously, the policy had only specifically protected religious groups from this type of speech. Under the new policy, Twitter says that offending tweets will be removed when they are reported. Tweets that were sent before the new rule took effect will need to be deleted. If they are reported but will not directly result in any account suspensions since they predate the policy change. The policy update is based on feedback from the public and months of discussion internally and with experts, Twitter said. In a post announcing the change, the company said, quote, our primary focus is on addressing the risks of offline harm, and research shows that dehumanizing language increases that risk, end quote. The Dallas, Texas Public School District will be among the first in the nation to require cameras in all its special education classrooms to ensure student safety. Children who don't have the ability to speak because of significant disabilities can't explain to parents or teachers what happened if they are hurt at school. That makes it difficult to determine if an injury was an accident or intentional, or if anyone else was involved. Now Dallas trustees have decided to install cameras to help school officials find out what happened in a classroom should an incident arise. The school board recently voted 7-2 to require the video recording. The move was over the objections of the superintendent, Michael Hinojosa, who noted officials could not find another district in Texas or nationally that uses cameras in all special education settings. Texas law already requires public schools to place cameras in self-contained special education classrooms if a parent, staff member, or school trustee requests one. The timeline for installing them in every special ed classroom across Dallas has not yet been set. District administrators noted that under the new policy, parents will not be able to opt out of a special education classroom if they don't want their child under surveillance. The state law does not allow for opting out, however. Administrators say they could move students to another class under the current setup if someone were to object. Families surveyed this school year by the district overwhelmingly supported installing cameras in the classroom. The survey found that 75.6% of English-speaking parents and 90.5% of Spanish-speaking parents support the use of cameras. The survey found that 70% of special education teachers oppose the district's camera mandate. Of those who responded, 28% they would look for jobs elsewhere if Dallas requires their use. But board members said the cameras could exonerate teachers falsely accused of mistreating students. They noted previous examples where that happened. Officials said it would cost about $3.5 million to get all 479 classrooms equipped with the right infrastructure and to cover storage fees for the recordings. The policy states that recordings wouldn't take place in blended classrooms where students with disabilities are in general education settings with other students. Dustin Rinders, supervising attorney with Disability Rights Texas, said special education advocates lobbied to have cameras in classrooms because of horrific stories of children being abused or injured. For example, he said recently that his group worked with a family whose child had been restrained improperly with both hands zip-tied behind his back, which resulted in a broken bone. The staff member involved hadn't been trained on appropriate ways to restrain a student if the child is a harm to himself or others, Rinders said. As part of their research into camera use, Dallas officials surveyed districts across the state and country, including in Austin, Houston, Fort Worth, Los Angeles, Miami-Dade, Chicago, New York, and Philadelphia. None of those districts that responded had a policy or procedure that mandated cameras in special education classrooms. Trustee Dustin Marshall pushed for expanding the use of cameras in Dallas after meeting with an advisory group of special education stakeholders. The new camera policy was adopted on the same day trustees were updated on the district's efforts to ensure that all students who qualify for special ed services are receiving them. Texas recently came under fire when federal investigators found that state practices essentially encouraged districts to limit the number of students they enrolled in special education to about 8.5% of their enrollment. Dallas officials said stepped-up efforts in the district have seen special ed enrollment rise to about 10% of the student population. Research has repeatedly found that students are often over-identified for special ed. Officials noted that a new data tool allows them to spot trends and concerns sooner. For example, research shows Black male students are greatly overrepresented in special education, often identified as having emotional disturbance conditions. Dallas administrators said they are working to see what district practices or underlying biases might account for enrollment being high for some children. And that's the news for this week.
If your life was on videotape, wouldn't everything be all right? When your head hurts the morning after, and you could roll it back to late last night, you could replay all the good parts and cut out what you don't like. Oh, wouldn't you?
And you are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, and I'm joined today in the studio by Kathy Spiegel, who is the Director?
Coordinator.
Coordinator of Illinois Radio Reader, a program that has been featured years ago. So I'm anxious to hear from Kathy and about all the exciting stuff that they're doing and providing for the community. So welcome to the program, Kathy.
Thanks.
So let's start out by you can introduce yourself to the listeners and let them know who you are and why you do what you do.
Well, like you said, my name is Kathy Spiegel. I've been in the community since 1990 in various capacities, always worked for not-for-profits, which brings me a lot of joy. When this position opened up, it was because I knew the community very well. And it's been a joy because I'm getting to work directly with volunteers on a daily basis, and we are providing a much needed service for people with disabilities.
And how long has Radio Reader been in existence?
This is our 41st year.
41st year. And how many years have you been with them?
This is my sixth year.
Okay. So really kind of a fresh face in the grand scheme of things, right?
A little bit, yes. Because my predecessor had been here almost 20 years.
So why don't we start out with just kind of a little bit of a summary on what Radio Reader is and what it does provide to the community.
What it does provide is what we call a sound connection. We broadcast on the air readings of the newspapers, both local and some far away, like the Washington News, the Baltimore News. We do the News Gazette, mm-hmm. the Bloomington paper, the paper from the Herald and Review from Decatur. We do Vermilion County every day. We do Christian Science Monitor every day. And we read articles for either a half hour or an hour for people who can't read on their own. It could be a physical or a visual disability that keeps them from being able to read printed material.
Mm-hmm. And so do you read the, let's use the News Gazette for an example.
Well, we start out by reading the local news first. So mm-hmm. basically you start with the front page. Anything that's marked Urbana or Champaign County, we cover that first. And that usually takes about a half an hour. And then the second half, we go in to finish up the local news. We always do the obituaries for every community. And depending on, like today, from Sunday's paper, there were three pages of obituaries. Mm. We make sure that we cover our generalized local area. Anything from Vermilion County, we wait and save that for their broadcast. But anything in this area, we do here. Then we finish up. We may pick a national piece. We may do some sport news. We may read Dear Abby. It just depends on the time frame. So if you've only got 3 minutes left, you can't start a long article.
Right. And so it's limited to an hour.
To an hour. We have 2 half-hour readings of all of those newspapers, except for Vermilion County, which is a half hour each day.
Okay. And so how do you, obviously you have to look at the paper in advance and choose what you're going to read. Who does all that organization?
On the hard copies that we get, I go through the paper and just red X so people can scan the page very quickly and find it. In this day and age, we don't get hard copies of most of the papers. They come electronically, so the readers have two screens. One screen has the paper up, so they're reading it off the screen, mm-hmm. and the other screen that they're using is their audio recording. So the reader actually gets to pick what they're going to read.
Oh.
So what we say is, no matter what it is in print, you read it just the way it's written. You don't editorialize. You don't make comments. Mm-hmm. So sometimes the news can be pretty gross. And you don't let that come through in your reading. You just read the words.
You have to be very objective.
You do. And
no judgment.
No judgment, but we want people to be personal about it. So I like to say, think about reading to your grandmother or your neighbor or your aunt, and just read to that person. Don't worry about being professional. Don't worry about stumbling over words. Even when we're talking to someone casually, we repeat ourselves.
Mm-hmm. That's true. So who is this intended to serve?
It is intended to serve anyone in our greater Champaign area who can't read on their own. So we say print impaired as opposed to visually handicapped, because you can have physical handicaps that prevent you from holding a paper, your hands shake. So somebody that has some kind of Alzheimer's that makes their hands shake, mm-hmm. They will not be able to read the written word. So it can be either visual or physical. If they can't read the written word, the printed word, then they're eligible.
Okay. And so now how do people access the service?
Well, usually people will call. And they will ask us, how do I do this? And then I fill them in on the information. We also go to low vision fairs in the area. I met you again this year at the Disability Fair, and we had quite a few radios that we sent out. So people say, you know, this would really work for my mom, or this is something I think I could use because I can't read on my own anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They fill out an application. If they qualify, I send them a receiver at no cost. And all they have to do is plug it in and turn it on.
So it's essentially just a radio like you would have mm-hmm. on your kitchen counter.
Right,
whatever.
But it's a sub-channel. So it's a channel you can't get on anything else other than one of these.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't cost anything to get it. The other way to get us is on the internet. So if you are computer savvy or you have someone in your family that can go to our website, we have a Clearstream. And you just press the Listen Now button and you'll hear as clear as a bell.
Interesting. Yes. So you should get an app, right?
Well, you don't really need an app. If you go to the WILL website, we have mm-hmm. our own page, and you go to our page and just hit Listen Now. What I'm working on is getting us into Alexa and the Echo Dot so mm-hmm. that you can listen to us. Hey, Alexa, how about Illinois Radio Reader? So mm-hmm. that's our next step.
Uh-huh. Somebody's Alexa who is listening to the program right now just popped on
it probably
and answered
did.
The question. I don't know the answer to that question.
But you have to have a router for that. You've got to be connected to the internet, and a lot of older Americans are not. Mm-hmm. And people who live in rural areas or people who are in extended care facilities may not have access to the internet.
Do you have any idea how many people, well, I'm sure you know how many people have the actual receivers in their homes?
We have about 400 of those out in the whole area.
Wow.
And when we do Google Analytics to try to find out how many people are accessing us over the internet, and it's usually about 300 a month who are tapping into the page, and they may want to like just listen to the News Gazette. So if you scroll down on our page, I put up that broadcast every day, so you don't have to have your radio on when it's being broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
You can go and pull that file up and listen to it anytime. But again, you have to have a computer.
Yeah, yeah. So when you're listening to it on the receiver, when you turn it on, you just get what you get. There's
exactly.
no scrolling through and skipping the sports page or anything like
that. Nope, you're stuck with the whole thing.
So there's definitely an advantage to doing it online. Now, you said that people have to qualify to get an actual receiver in their home. For the online version, are there qualifications?
No. Mm-mm. We predicate everything we publish or say with the caveat that this broadcast is intended for people with print impaired abilities. And we assume that if you are accessing it, that's what you're doing with it.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't require any kind of password or any kind of registration.
Yeah, well, I could see this being really attractive to people who are in the car for a long time in the morning and don't have a chance to read the newspaper.
If they've got a cell phone mm-hmm. and they can pull up the Illinois Radio Reader page on their cell phone, I do this all the time on the weekends, and just hit the Listen Now on their cell phone, they can listen to us.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty amazing. So this is a volunteer service.
Yes, it is.
All your readers are volunteers. How many readers do you have currently?
I have about 52 on the list. That includes,
oh my God.
That includes all of our regular readers who have agreed to take a specific slot. And then I have about 15 subs who will fill in when people are out of town or death in the family, or you know, they need to go take care of their grandchild, or they've got a doctor's appointment and they can't come in.
Mm-hmm.
And those subs are really important, because when I come in the morning and I've got three messages that say I'm not coming in today, I'm getting kind of desperate.
Yeah.
But the subs are really good.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's an amazing, how do you choose the people? Because I'm sure you get a lot of people calling you saying, hey, I'd like to do this. I like to read the paper. I'm a good reader. How do you sort through those?
I know this sounds terrible. We have such a blessing of riches. I have people on my waiting list since 2017, because once these people volunteer and get into it, they don't want to leave. But I keep you on the waiting list. And when somebody decides they don't want to do it anymore or move away, I just go to the next person on the list. You come in. We have a little orientation, practice reading, practice using the technology, because there is a little bit of a learning curve, as you know, when you're mm-hmm. broadcasting. Our biggest problem probably is people who are avid readers who think they read really well, but when you read to yourself, you read really fast,
and you don't read every word. You don't read is the and. When you're reading out loud, you have to do that, and you have to pronounce your consonants.
Yes.
So especially younger readers who aren't used to doing that, we just have to say slow down.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want you to sound artificial or stilted in your reading, but you have to remember that as we get older, our hearing isn't as acute as it used to be. So we need to hear those consonants and the ings on the ends of words.
Absolutely. Here at the radio station, I do public affairs training. And so I tell folks that if you're reading something on the air, if you're recording it or broadcasting it either way, that you really have to think about what you're reading. Otherwise, it just sounds like you're reading.
Yes.
So is that something that you have?
Some people are better than others. Some people just read. And but they've been doing it a long time, and the only time I will ask if someone's ready to retire, quote unquote, is if I find that they forget to save a recording or leave big gaps in their recording. Usually they'll come to me and say, I think it's time for me to not do this anymore, because it's really hard to let a volunteer go, you know.
Yeah, but it sounds like you have a lot of them waiting in the wings.
We do,
too.
We do.
So as technology improves, do you see that the radio receiver part of this program going away? Is it going to go completely online in 20 years or so?
Well, maybe in 20 years, not in the near future. After we finished the disability fair here and I did another low vision fair in Decatur, I sent out 6 radios in a week.
Oh, wow.
So people are still requesting those because a lot of older Americans just don't have access to a computer.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know how to use adaptive equipment with the screen to blow it up big enough so that they can do that on their own, or to be able to use magnification of a newspaper. So the need is still there. And as the baby boomers move into the senior citizen range, which they are now doing, those diseases that affect older Americans, they're estimating about 3 million more a year are going to need help with reading.
Yeah, wow. And so I'm thinking, though, that the receiver, you know, sending out the receivers is a good way of managing and knowing what exactly the impact is that your program is having.
We don't hear back too often from readers unless there's something, like if we go off the air for some reason, I'll get a phone call. But our readers seem to be very happy with the program. Occasionally we will do telephone calls and ask them what their favorite show is. Are they listening? And the majority of them are very nice to talk to, but a lot of them are bedridden and just aren't into conversation. Now, if I can get a hold of their families and talk to their caregivers, they're very supportive of the program.
Mm-hmm. So you get a receiver. Is it for a certain period of time?
No.
Or once you get it, you have it and...
We just say that if you are no longer using it, please return it.
Mm-hmm. And if people move, they're not going to be able to get the broadcast, right?
No, because every area that has a service like this has a different band that they use.
Okay. All right. So what other things are important for people to know about Illinois Radio Reader?
Well, I think the most important thing for us is that if you have someone in your family or your church group or in a social setting, and you know that they're having difficulties, ask them if that would be a service that they would like, or call me and I will be more than happy to give them a call. We're very lucky that a lot of the eye doctors in the area, the optometrists, caregivers, home health care people know about our service, and they will approach their client with that, and then they'll let me know that that's something that they would like. And I'm more than happy to make home visits if it's appropriate.
Yeah. Well, that's an amazing resource. So if people want to get in touch with you and become recipients of a receiver or access the program in some way, how do they do that?
Well, our phone number is 217-333-6503. I am in the office every day from 7 to noon. And if I don't answer the phone, please do leave a message and I will get back with you. The other way is if you have access to a computer, you can go to our website, if you just Google Illinois Radio Reader, our page pops right up.
Mm-hmm.
And our web news is in there. The program is there with the listing of all the programs. There is an application there that you can download and print off.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to get everything on that one page so it's easy to access.
Yeah, yeah. So just before we finish up, is there anything that you can think of that is just a really unusual thing that happened with Illinois Radio Reader, or something, a funny story that you can share with the listeners?
Well, one of the things we do on Friday is four local newspapers. So we do Rantoul, Piatt County, Mahomet, and Monticello. And one of my readers has a daughter that lives in San Antonio, Texas, and she grew up in Mahomet. So she knows that if she turns on the radio on Fridays at 12:30, she can listen to her dad read the radio, read the paper, and she'll listen to it.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. It's really a great resource for the community, and I look forward to maybe checking out that website, which was the WILL website, or Google.
I would Google Illinois Radio Reader, because then it pops
the easiest.
Right up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the phone number again?
217-333-6503. Leave a message, please.
You're not going to pick up the phone right away?
Well, you know, I get robocalls just like everybody else.
Oh,
so
if
no one leaves a message, I very rarely will return just an odd phone number.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yes, definitely leave a message then. The number 217-333-6503, and talk to Kathy Spiegel.
Right.
The director of Illinois Radio Reader.
Thanks for having me in today, Vicki.
Thank you for coming in. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great rest of your week. No, I stand my ground, won't be turned around, and I'll keep this world from dragging me down. Gonna stand my ground, and I won't back down. And you are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. By the way, WEFT is back broadcasting over the air, as you probably know if you're listening today over the air, after a short outage last week, and that is thanks to our amazing tower antenna crew, our donors, and our community partners. The new antenna has been placed on our new tower, and the WEF transmitter has been moved to its new home and connected and tuned to our satellite equipment. WEFT is required to broadcast at reduced power for a period of 30 days, so if you're a listener on the fringes of our broadcast area, it may affect your ability to receive a strong enough signal for that period of time. Once it's determined that WEFT isn't interfering with other radio station signals, we will boost our power back up to 100%. Again, we thank our donors and community partners for the funds to make this possible, as well as thanking you, our listeners, for your patience. Coming up next is Food Sleuth Radio, but before that, let's do one public service announcement. The Sudden Sound Krannert Art Museum Spring Series is happening starting Thursday, March 12th. Kara Stacy will be in town at the art museum. She is a South African composer, and she meets the women of the Improvisers Exchange in a special performance of new cross-cultural works developed in residence as a George A. Miller visiting scholar. Stacy's experimentation as a composer is complemented by her research in bow music traditions found in the kingdom of Eswatini, formerly Swaziland and South Africa. Her background in classical and modern piano performance, and her pursuit of establishing unique ensembles for collective improvisation. That's Thursday, March 12th at 7:30 p.m. at the Krannert Art Museum, located at 600 East Peabody Drive in Champaign. And now here is today's episode of Food Sleuth Radio.
Hi, welcome to Food Sleuth Radio, where we help you think beyond your plate. I'm Melinda Hemmelgarn, a registered dietitian and investigative nutritionist on a mission to connect the dots between food, health, and agriculture and find food truth. And today I'm honored to welcome my guest, Ms. Melissa Abbott. She is Vice President of Culinary Insights for the Hartman Group, a leading consumer culture consultancy and research firm.